Ooh, yeah, I sound louder. So we're in a part of the municipal record storage facility, which holds about 80,000 cubic feet of records. Huge, enormous, and they've carved out a space for us. So there have been a lot of records put in there up to that point, but they've been all controlled by departments, the department that put them in there. So there hasn't been a good sense of what the city has up to this point. But there is a process for legal destruction, and we've kind of tacked ourselves on to the end of that. Right now, if anybody wants to destroy some records in the city, theoretically, in theory, they have to classify them according to the state archives has put out a record schedule. Then they go to the records manager of the city, who signs off on it, the department director signs off on it, the attorney signs off on it, and then it comes to me, or it did come to me. And then I have to sign off on anything before it got destroyed. So in that way, we've been able to gather a lot more records that, you know, people may not have thought were particularly valuable. So after August, the NHPRC grant runs out, and we are continuing funding solely through the city. I mean, we will be applying for additional small project grants, but basic expenses will be provided, hopefully, through the city. So one thing that actually I really liked Mike's idea about that, the county archives committee, that sounds actually quite lovely, because one of the things that you may not have any control over is where on earth within your organization you exist. For us, we were set up as a division of the city clerk's office, and by the city charter, the clerk is responsible for keeping the records of the council and the city. That's the official language. So what that mostly means is they do the city council minutes, and they run the elections, and then they also run the records management program for the city. So these are all. So we're sort of a small division of a larger record-keeping organization. And I know when we applied for a couple grants, a couple of the reviewers were like, well, maybe you should try to be independent, or maybe you should be set up under the library. And, you know, that would be nice, but not something that we have actual control over. So there are, you know, some pros and cons, and we've tried to figure out ways to sort of leverage the benefits of being part of the city clerk's office and maybe mitigate some of the risks. So some of the benefits to the city structure, since the city clerk's office keeps the minutes of the city council, they have major access to council members who are, you know, in charge of the final budget. They also have extensive contact with department heads, the city manager, all sorts of really influential decision makers within the city. So the funding to that department tends to be a little more stable. And also, one of the benefits to the city clerk is, once again, sort of perceived competition with the county clerk. Originally, the archives program was conceived as a city-county partnership, but they couldn't sort of work out who would be responsible for paying for what, and they decided to split off. But the county has had the benefit of, at some point in the distant past, they were designated as a recipient for some percentage of, I think, like parking tickets or something like that, and they have managed to hang on to that revenue stream for dear life and have a really staggering amount of money. So they have, you know, just gotten a brand new reading room, brand new fancy display cases in the county courthouse. They are individually encapsulating all their documents. Yes. I mean, truly staggering amounts of money. So if we want, you know, if the city wants to keep up with the county, then we may be in pretty good shape. The other benefit to being within the city clerk's office is we do have that instant connection to the records management program that already exists. So we've been able to sort of plug in right into that existing program rather than starting from total scratch about that. Now, of course, there are some risks to placement. I know in a lot of large organizations and governments in particular, there can be a fairly rigid hierarchy. In the city of San Antonio, your business card tells a lot about you. If the city seal on your business card is gold, you're like a department head, an executive. If it's green, you're a manager. If you're black, European. Mine is black. So it can sometimes be a little bit hard to get your voice heard if you're not in sort of the top tier. And additionally, as sort of a division of a department, there is a lack of independence. And within the city clerk's office, they're not necessarily have a whole lot of experience with archives and library norms. So with that lack of independence, those two sort of combine. When the department director may have a vision for the program that does not always conform to sort of archival standards or best practices, there can be a bit of conflict there. And as part of a larger department, it's a little more easy for funding to be diverted to the more sort of core functions of the department. So even though money may be designated for you at the beginning of the fiscal year, whether you actually get to use that money may be a little more questionable. So we've done a few things to try to work with those benefits and maybe take away some of those risks. So we've been working really hard at demonstrating our utility to both sort of average city employees and taking advantage of all the access that we can get to the decision makers, the people who really have control over the budget. We're hoping that by making ourselves incredibly useful to the city employees, word will trickle up to the people that have a little more control over the money. So how do we demonstrate our utility to the ordinary folks? Now, the picture on top there is a parking garage that was, you know, totally filled with boxes. People just sort of dump things. And the big way that we've sort of gotten visibility is whenever we hear that, you know, people may be moving offices. There's been a lot of shifting within the city, people moving to new buildings, old buildings getting torn down. We make sure that we're in there. Hey, can we help you move? You want us to? I will come and take that file cabinet totally away from you. No problem. Let me help in whatever way we can. Also, there recently have been a number of records management changes. There's been a new electronic records management system and new policies that have come down that all city employees have been receiving training on. So I've been making sure that I've been helping out, volunteering to help out and teach some of those records management training classes so that I can get in there and say, oh, by the way, you know, if you see anything that looks like this or if you want any help with your, you know, records management, just let us know. We'll come in. We'll just take it off your hands for you. So anything that we can do to sort of reduce the burden on the individual employees. Part of the way the records management program is set up is that there's a records liaison in every department, and they're responsible for sort of coordinating the classification and storage and destruction of all the records for each department. Now, most of the time, this is the person who's the newest person at the bottom of the ladder, who, you know, whose job probably doesn't have anything to do with records management whatsoever. And they tend to be a little overwhelmed. So anytime, you know, we can come in and say, here, let us help you go through some of this stuff. Odds are that we'll be able to take, you know, at least, you know, 30% of it off your hands and, you know, make the rest that much easier for you. So we've also been taking over open records requests. A lot of the things that come in, you know, we get calls from people saying, okay, I got an open records request that are looking for, you know, all these pictures on this particular train in a park. And, you know, we can say, well, you know, we can, you know, give you all those. You can send the person just directly here, have them come talk to us, we'll take care of everything for you. The more sort of we can remove the burden from these employees, I think has really helped us build a reputation as helpful and useful. And also, anytime there's been retirements or resignations, these poor records liaisons, you know, get stuck with, oh my God, there's a new person coming in 2 days and I have to get all the records out. Especially when it's a higher up person. I think we've done the deputy city manager, and actually our mayor just switched out, and we went in and helped clear out all those file cabinets and just made sure that we got the mayor's records before they got you know, shoved to the side or accidentally went out with the old chairs or something like that. And there's also been just a lot of sort of spontaneous opportunities, just grabbing every chance you can get to sort of make yourself known. Since there, you know, nobody really knew we existed at all, since we're a pretty brand new program. But the one nice thing about city organizations is there's a lot of training classes that you have to go to, customer service training and defensive driving and, you know, all that sort of thing. And in most of those trainings, at the beginning of the class, the, you know, teacher has you go around and say your name and department, and if you were a kitchen utensil, which kitchen utensil would you be? So I can, you know, every time I make sure I go in and say, hi, I'm Amanda, I'm from the city archives. Yes, we exist. Oh, and by the way, you know, I'm a spoon, and by the way, if you see anything that, you know, looks old, let me know. So just sort of grabbing every opportunity to shake somebody's hand and say, how can I help you? Let me find a way to help you. So, and when we get to the decision makers, there's a little bit of different strategies going on there. Because since they don't have as much contact with the individual work that goes into sort of archives and open records requests and things, you have to sort of play to a different side of their, really, vanity. In San Antonio, council members and terms is 2 years. So we have people rotating in and out fairly frequently. So what the Office of the City Clerk has started doing is sort of new council member orientations. So they, you know, have a little lunch, and each person in the department or sort of head of each sort of little division comes in and talks about, you know, what the council member needs to know about what the city clerk's office does. So they talk about, you know, all the ethics forms that they have to do and financial disclosures and, you know, how meetings are going to be run. And I made sure that, you know, I was trying to get my seat at that table and say, okay, here's, you know, what the archives is. Here's, you know, all the good things we've been doing around the city, and, you know, here's how we can help you. And San Antonio also has a few historians that write for the papers. There's a column in the paper about, you know, history in San Antonio. So we make sure to collaborate with that columnist as much as we can. I know we've gotten questions that she's asked. We've suggested a few topics. And so we make sure that we're trying to get our name out in print for hopefully the council members and the mayors can, you know, see that, you know, the public knows that we exist. That's gotten curtailed a little bit. There was just a new communications plan that came down with the city, once more in that rigid hierarchy, that if you're not a designated communicator, you're not allowed to talk to the media in any form. And once again, I've got that black seal on my business card, so not allowed to talk to the media. So we're trying to work our way through other channels to still get our name out there without sort of violating that policy. Another thing we try to stress with council members and the mayor is sort of the implications for their legacy. When we can go to the mayor and say, here's all the papers and the materials that the previous mayor gave us, and don't you want to look just as good as they did? And, you know, let's make sure the public knows about all the things that you've accomplished in office. So we've actually had pretty good success about getting a lot of the current mayor, or the mayor who just left office. We've collected his papers on his way out. And now we didn't actually get any contact with the mayor at that point, but, you know, with his speechwriter and his, you know, all his aides, so let's work together to, you know, make sure Mayor Hardberger's legacy lives on. We've also, thanks to that lovely competition with the county clerk, been able to get a display case put up in City Hall, and that's a picture of it. So we've been trying to sort of highlight various collections. That one, I think, was on, we have a lot of maps, architectural records. We've done one on the bridges of San Antonio. I think the current one up is the San Antonio River, which the Riverwalk is sort of the big tourist attraction besides the Alamo, and they just opened a new extension on it So we've been trying to sort of keep it current that way. And we've also gotten another display case that's going to go in the lobby of City Hall. Unfortunately, this one, while very lovely, they've put it up on the second floor of City Hall, which is not exactly a high traffic area. It's right outside the city clerk's office, so not as many people get to see that as we would hope. But they're currently working on some renovations on the first floor of City Hall, and we have a display case that will be going on the first floor in the lobby right outside the mayor and city manager's office that will get us much more sort of visibility, very high traffic area. So we've been really sort of working on the mayor, city manager, council members to hopefully convince them that yes, that we are an established part of, you know, the city structure. We need to continue, you know, we're serving the public and representing the city in an extremely positive manner. So that's sort of what we've been working on so far. Once again, we're still in the crossing fingers stage and waiting to find out how this funding opportunity is going to go. But thank you.
Hopefully it will just go away.
Yeah.
Yay.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Here's two.
Yes. she's 19th century even, maybe.
My name is Pat Johnson, and I'm from the Sacramento City and County Archives. We are the veterans here in that we were established back in the 1960s as an official city and county archive. So we hold the records of the city and county, but we also are in a unique position in that we hold privately donated manuscript materials also. And so it makes us kind of unique in that way. I'm going to be... thank you.
Does it work? Quick, Mr.
Or maybe a program or something. So I'm going to be talking more about our outreach activities, and even though we have been established for 40 years, there are still lots of people who do not know we exist. And so one of my jobs, and one of my most favorite jobs within my job description, is to go out and do outreach to a wide variety of constituencies. And I'm going to be talking about those, what I do as part of those duties. We are funded by the city and the county. And yes, I was agreeing with Mike about SB 827. It was started in a little Yolo County archives, and it would help with our funding on the county side. While we're funded by the city and the county, more of our money comes from the city side than the county side, and we're a division within city government. And Amanda was with the city clerk's office, and we're part of convention, culture, and leisure. We're reinvented from over the decades. We used to be part of parks and recreation. We were part of neighborhood services. Currently, we're under the department called Convention, Culture, and Leisure. And I haven't quite figured out whether we're leisure or culture, maybe a little of both. But we're in there with the zoo and the Children's Museum, the Crocker Art Museum, the golf division, the Convention and Visitors Bureau, and so on. So still, we need to educate people about who we are and what we do on a regular basis. And I provide that in a variety of ways. I get to talk to all kinds of groups. I get to lead tours all over. We do publications, current websites, collaborations with other institutions, conduct workshops, seminars as part of our mission to let people know who we are, go on the road, road shows, linking the community with their heritage, do education seminars, collaborations with other local institutions, and then last but not least, mentoring students and volunteers. We have a staff of three. Actually, we're down to 2.5, plus a division manager and a curator for artifacts for the local museum that we support. And then a cadre of student interns and volunteers. So first I'd like to talk about a little bit about public agencies and the outside groups that I give talks to. Public agencies, as far as the city and the county are concerned, we have a kind of weak records management program. We've been working on trying to get it established, and I get to go around with a little brochure developed for city agencies and county agencies to talk about their records and when there is a change in regime, how to transfer their materials. So we are working on getting a records management program in place, but it hasn't quite happened yet. So I get to do that, those kinds of things, because most of those offices, as they change over time, do not realize that we exist. So it's a constant effort to educate those folks. And it's kind of fun. You get to go to their meetings, their lunches, and talk about who we are and what we do. Service clubs. I get invited to the Rotary all the time and to other service clubs, women's groups, Soroptimus, and other service groups to talk about who we are and what we do. And they usually feed you breakfast or lunch. Not always the best, but at least it's something. Genealogical societies. Get invited to genealogical societies. We developed a case study using our records that is currently on our website so other folks can take a look at it. And it focuses on the kinds of records that we have in our collection that the genealogists can use to discern their stories. Also, we put an ad for our services in their speakers directory. The Northern California Genealogical Society has all their individual little societies sponsoring a speakers bureau directory. And so we're in there so that they can let them know that we're available and our services are available. Also, we go around to historical societies and small museums to talk about preserving their materials, not necessarily that we're here to help you, we're here from the government and we're here to help you kind of attitude, but to show them how to better take care of their materials. And that has worked very well, very well. Also to teachers groups. I was in a session yesterday about teachers groups and talking about sponsoring for National History Day, and I've been going and giving workshops at the schools to teachers groups, whether they're in the special language arts program or social studies or history departments, to promote our curriculum, their curriculum rather, using primary source material and using the records at the archives and furthering their projects. And we also have a gateway to history on our website as part of the development of that curriculum for various topics within our holdings. The results of all that is that now more people learn who we are and what we do, as many of these groups have never heard of us before. For tours at my facility, most of those groups I always offer and invite them to come after I've given talks to these various groups to show off our stuff and how we take care of it. Also for education classes, they come to see how our collections. They're always amazed because in addition to all our archival material and public records, we also have museum artifacts that we are storing in our site that go on exhibit at the affiliated museum in Old Sacramento. So they get to see the stuff and how we do our work. Then we also hold open houses and receptions and exhibits at City Hall. We have in the clerk's office, in the front of the mayor's office. Also, a new annex was recently built and attached to the historic City Hall. And there's an exhibit space dedicated to Robert Matsui, who was our congressman who passed away in 2001. And so we're sponsoring exhibits also in our reading room. And we invite the mayor, who is a friend of the archives, along with the council and the county officials to come. We're hosting speaker series within that are related to the exhibit that we have in our reading room. So that's a chance for more people to come and see the primary sources and to learn how we maintain the holdings and what works and what doesn't work. As far as publications and website collaborations, we're doing book series. We contribute to the Historical Society's journal articles. And my colleague, who is the techno geek, said, be sure to mention that we have on our website YouTube, Flickr, any images of the events we've held recently, and also our case study, and our website has just been revamped and launched as the 1st of August. So if you're interested, you can go to centerforsacramentohistory.org and see the website. and he's the one who's maintaining it. That's because he's the 30-something. When I retire, he's going to be in charge. So the other thing we do is hold workshops at our site or at other sites, such as neighborhood associations and groups. We go and give workshops on how to do house or neighborhood research using our collections, and that helps to preserve the history of their areas. In Sacramento, we have a number of historic neighborhoods that are on the register for the register for historic places. And so they're always wanting to maintain, and as the ownership of those places change over time, they come and want to do the research on the history of their house. We do a collaboration with the city library, special collections in Sacramento on house history, doing house research. With historical societies, we have provided preservation workshops, how to take care of their archival material on a regular basis, with hands-on experience, whether it's encapsulation, although I don't know that they're going to encapsulate every single document. But also, just how to take care of their stuff impart to them that we're not really here from the government wanting to take away their stuff. They think, oh, we're the big guys and we're going to want to accession all their material and have them disappear. That is not the case. Also, for our local museum that we're affiliated with, we host History Camp for young people in the summer. And History Camp it's usually a day-long camp, week at a time, and they can either come and learn. Usually they bring an item to encapsulate. We also share with them how we do our work and how to use primary source material. And this year we also hosted an archaeology camp from one of the digs that was done on one of the building sites in Sacramento. And that was great fun because they actually got to clean artifacts and wrap them up and take care of them the way a museum curator would work. So it gives these groups these opportunities to come and not only see how we do our work, but take ownership of their history, instill pride in their communities, and give success in assisting these historical societies in taking care of their holdings, like I said, without the threat of having to give them up. Roadshows. Mike mentioned roadshows. And we always participate in a variety of roadshows where we can have a table, set up our wares, do small mini exhibits. We do annual open house with the State Archives because we are in Sacramento. So the State Archives hosts Archives Month in October. And they always host an open house, and we go to talk about who we are locally. Also, genealogical societies have family history days, and we participate in that, and usually we're doing a session on how to use the genealogical materials, and also have a table to show who we are and what we do. And then historic neighborhood house tours always come in the fall. That's in September. And they choose a different historic neighborhood to feature for where you can go and actually visit the houses. And all of the research that's done on the history of those places are done with us. And so we always want to be a presence there and talk about who we are, how you can come and use the materials in the archives to discover the history of your house. And that neighborhood changes every year. Also, the various neighborhood associations host picnic days or brunches or lunches, that sort of thing, and we always go and participate in those groups too and have a table. We're very heavily involved in County History Day. We have sponsored the children to come on a Saturday to do research, to use primary source material in their History Day projects. And then we have another unique project that's sort of based on Los Angeles's Shades of LA project, in which we called Faces and Places of Sacramento. And we're going around. We started with the city council districts hosting an event in each district office, whether it's the community center in that district, for the residents of that community to come and bring their photographs where we photograph their photographs, or we scan them and give them back their originals. Some people have donated their original materials to us, but we're documenting their neighborhood, and then we create an exhibit that goes up in that community center and then on the district members' website, the council members' website. We also have a Friends of the Archives for Sacramento. It's called the Sacramento History Foundation. It's Friends of the Archives that sponsor and help us with projects. And so here we have an opportunity to have a presence out in a variety of public settings. participating in these events, we try to demonstrate to the host institution that we value their effort to reach out to different community groups, and so that we find them important. Another aspect is education and seminars at California State University Sacramento, which is, of course, in Sacramento. Within the history department and the geography department and the education department, we're hosting a variety of classes at our institution to introduce these students to a variety of our resources. I also teach in the history department at the graduate level archives and manuscripts class, which is a semester-long class, of course, and they actually get to process collections, real collections. So that's an important aspect. And we do now have a few new archivists as a result of that. Cultural resources class comes and learns how to use the resources to do their research projects. And the museum studies class that's within the history department comes and learns how to handle artifacts. From the geography department, the class comes all about every other year, I think, and does a field project documenting the geography of a neighborhood, and not just the physical geography, but the cultural geography and the social geography of the neighborhood. And that's always been a lot of fun, because those are constituents that haven't usually thought of using the archives. And from the education department, both at CSUS and at the local community college, come the library science students to learn how archives do their work differently from the library science programs. And they always come and have a one day or one evening or Saturday kind of workshop at our institution. Also, the Western Archives Institute, sponsored by the California State Archives and the Society of California Archivists, have hosted photography sessions during their two-week boot camp program at our institution because of the wide variety of photographic materials we have in our collection. So teaching furthers our mission and gives us an opportunity to introduce new students to our holdings. In addition, it's a chance for the new archivists, librarians, and museum curators to gain a firsthand experience in handling collections. And last but not least are our student interns and our volunteers. We try to provide student internship opportunities. And over the last 10 years or so, I've mentored more than a couple of dozen of students that have gone on to archival careers. And for volunteers, I don't like to leave them out, because we only have a staff of 3. We have a core of about 25 to 30 volunteers that come every week on a regular basis to work on all kinds of projects, whether it's extraction projects, cataloging projects, preservation projects, a whole host of materials. And it's always an enjoyment for me to mentor students and to watch them grow and develop. And many of them have gone on, like I said, to successful careers, and it's always fun to have volunteers who are mostly retired school teachers, school principals, state workers all come because of their passion for history. And in concluding, I'd just like to say planning for all these various activities that I've just talked about is imperative, because be careful what you ask for. Pitfalls exist in all these areas, and that is, you can experience some overwhelming success that you might not be prepared for. So you get too many people at once from some of these activities, and your staff can get stretched a little bit too thin. And when you host people at your place, they're going to want to see the stuff, and so company is coming. You have to do a little cleaning up. And managing students and interns can be a big time commitment, and it can be a little bit disappointing if they aren't suited to the work. But overall, sharing the treasures from our collections with all kinds of audiences is one of the most rewarding aspects of my job. And I thank you very much.
It is on. We do totally welcome questions or just your sharing your own experiences. If you share your own experience, do be prepared that I have to repeat it into the mic, because we are being a recorded session and there's a big thing on here about being a recorded session. So I will try, but you know, we'll get the gist across and have a conversation. So please, anyone want to share or talk about what's different where they are, or
ask more?
Sure.
This question is particularly for Amanda, but it's the other.
Repeat the question.
So the question was that has the city done any work with other institutions in San Antonio who may have city records or pseudo-city records? And the answer is definitely yes. Our partners on the grant was the Texana Genealogy Department of the Public Library, who they had most of the official sort of city historical records that had been preserved so far were at the Texana Department. Some of those got moved over to the records facility just because we had a bit more space and they were pretty much out. They've kept some of them. Other institutions that have city records, some of them have, offered them to us. We haven't really gone after things too much at this point. We don't want to, go in and, start stealing everybody's collections, but we definitely welcome anything that, wants to sort of come back. I know that especially some mayor's papers have gotten scattered about a bit. Some of them, are in Austin. Some of them, have gone a bit more to the four winds, and we're definitely at least trying to track them down, figure out where they are. We've got a new website that's going up soon that we're going to try to at least link to other places, and in the finding aids we try to say, there's more on this topic at this other institution.
So one of our attendees who works at the University of Texas at San Antonio commented that it's one of the good connections that they made was through a regional archives group that they got a tour of the City of San Antonio archives, and because of that, then she was able to go back to her university community and let them know about what the resources were and how classes might use them or the faculty might use them and make those connections. Yes.
A comment from the audience was to the pointing out the value of having others within your own organization collaborate and spread the word about your archives as a means really of leveraging what is really a small organization with a small staff and to let others know about your services and what you do. I should add for Santa Clara County that because for quite a while before there was an archives, the county was doing a microfilm and TOSS program. There are a great many county records at an organization called History San Jose, which is kind of the offshoot of what once was the Museums Division of the City of San Jose. And we've, maintained, a very cooperative relationship. We're actually only a block apart, which was sort of serendipitous. So a researcher could actually go from one of us to the other to use different sets of county records.
And one of the things I've just been fascinated by is thinking about just the perspective of how much the work people were doing I love the term in-reach. I'm really have been contemplating that and seeing how important that really is, especially in a government structure. But I expect in almost any institutional structure, my perspective often is, well, how much of the public are you serving? How many people are coming in the door? But often in government settings, I think, and in other institutional settings, it's how you leverage one person who comes in the door from a particularly important division, or you go to their division, who then just starts generating more. They want I remember they wanted pictures from you, and you can provide the photographs that they need for their little historical retrospective, and even though you're not writing it, or even if you are writing it, how much that reaches more people than you might ever get in a user count. I mean, we at the NHPRC force people to tell us, so how many people walked in the door? But that, of course, is only a very limited use statistic. I mean, it's a very, they came in, they actually were called or emailed, but it's not really, doesn't always show the impact of the moment.
I know I went to visit the Dallas City Archives at one point, and John Slate there was keeping a little folder of clippings. I think he had a bunch of cases where I think the archives had helped, the city win a lawsuit or something like that, and they had, gotten in the newspaper, and he had a number of these sort of cases about how the archives had, real tangible value to other city departments. I thought, I haven't gotten that cool yet, but that seemed like a very, very, helpful thing for him to do, to be able to make the case that he's really an important part of the city.
Does anyone else have
Lucy,
stories?
I wanted to ask you a little bit about talking about PAR.
Oh, yeah, I was very tempted too,
yes.
But why don't you talk about it, since sometimes I'm a little restricted. I'm still being paid by the federal government today, so.
Well, it's another opportunity for us to apply for grant funding separate from the NHPRC, and there is a bill going through the Assembly and the Congress and both the House and the Senate to establish a $50 million pool of money that all of us could apply for processing projects. And I'm not an expert about that, but I did go and listen to SAA council member talk about PAR, and I'm not sure about the bill number or anything like that, so I don't know. Do you know that?
I think it's 2256. One of the things that is very important for the advocates of PAR, notice the sort of third person approach to this, is that that it has gotten quite a lot of sponsors right now, and it's really not. This is the time to go if you're interested. I'll try and translate it. It's a kind of formula-based thing, so we'll go to the state level, the state archives probably, in most structures. Each state has, again, its own structures, just like each city, county can. And then that money has to be distributed out. It's not just going to stay at the state archives. And that will provide a kind of base level amount for each state. It's they do a size and the population and some other magic number and come up with a specific amount that each state gets. And unlike what the kinds of money that the NHPRC is able to give to the states, that is a competitive process. We've been able to be pretty reliable about a certain level of funding, but it's nowhere near what this would be. And it does require people to put forward this specific thing. This money would sort of pretty much, there are requirements, but it would come down and then go out to individual repositories. And it's not that it would only go to government archives. It could, depending on how the state set up the rules, it could go to any kind of repository. But it's a definite opportunity for archives to have a base level of funding. I don't know how many people here know the acronym LSTA. See, if you don't know that, then you already aren't aware of a source of funding that may be available in your state. But the problem is, it's a very, very may. That's it's actually doesn't stand for anything that I always think it's going to stand for. But it's library money that comes to the states on a formula basis. Most of the time these days, it goes straight to the public libraries because they're in such need. But in rich times, there's sometimes state-level competitions that allow any repository to compete and get funding. For example, just to give a really, you'll probably think this isn't small enough, but an offbeat example is the Internet Archive, that has the Wayback Machine and, is posting, has been doing some digitization of books and formerly with Microsoft. They got a grant through LSTA money from the State Library of California. Now, that's sort of like the big guys getting money, but it's still, they have funded, have you gotten money? So, but different states, other states never give any money from those funds. So this is sort of the notion that by funding this stream, there would be a dedicated stream for historical records that's why it's called Preserving the American Historical Record. Mm-hmm. And did I get that right, Melanie?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. I make up words for acronyms sometimes. So I think it's a real opportunity. And it's recess, which, I've become a Washingtonian, so I sort of know, the way I know it's really recess is the person who lives across the street from me, across the hall from me, who's a legislative director, is on his honeymoon. If you're going to get married and you work in Congress, you got to do it in August, because that's the time people go away. So his boss is back in Florida, and your representatives are back in their districts. This is when they're having their barbecues and they're meeting with their big donors, and this is the time the staff is on alert in the district office, and you can just go in and meet with these people. And if you go to the SAA website, there's all the information you need to figure out how to do it. And they need more people to co-sign. It's not controversial. It's just, if there's not enough support, Congress doesn't have to do anything. I mean, I think, in a sense, PAR might have a better chance of getting passed in this economy than, alas, the Senate bill in California. I mean, yeah. It's a weird economy right now in Washington. I know out there, people are seeing cuts everywhere, and what we see in Washington is just expansion, expansion, more programs, new things. You know, whatever we think about this in the bigger sense of the world, it really would be nice to have some sort of dedicated stream.
I would just comment about the LSTA grant. Because we're not a library in my institution, we collaborated with the local libraries, with the state library, with the city library, and the state railroad museum library to do a 2-year project that was funded by LSTA. And we each institution contributed about 600 images, either photographs or ephemeral material, to a website that is still being maintained by the four collaborators. And it was documenting the transportation history of Sacramento. Of course, the railroad was big then, and also the agricultural history of Sacramento. And so each one of the contributors maintains the rights to their images and all that sort of thing. And so we cataloged the about 2,400 images altogether, I think, with 600 coming from each institution. So it was a great inroad, and that was done a few years ago. So collaboration, always good.
Yes, always. So I want to thank you all for coming, and if you've got questions for any of us up here, obviously if anybody is interested or has questions about applying for a grant to support your archives or expand it or start it, I'm happy to take them. The National Historical Publications and Records Commission is very proud of the archives that it has supported and very interested in helping other ones improve their services or start their services. So thank you very much. So the audience member suggested that if you live in a state which has a state historical records advisory board, probably located in the state archives, that might have money that they've gotten from the NHPRC for regrants, that especially city and county people should consider applying for that, because they've not been getting as many applications as they expected, at least in her state of Arizona. So. Anyway, I thank you all. I thank these participants. I thank you guys for being willing to be here on Saturday morning and in a cold room. And so let's give us all a round of applause.